Psalm 39. Tonight's lesson is the measure of my days. The measure of my days. Jim Dunham he calls himself a Christian gunslinger. Now, I know that's kind of a misuse of terms, I suppose, but he's not somebody that shoots people. He's a fast draw artist. He's one of the fastest quick draw artists in the world. He can fire, he can draw and fire and hit a target in 1/6 of a second. 1/6 of a second. That's fast. You don't want to get against him in a gunfight. But he has also taught many Western movie stars in the more recent years how to handle a gun. When he got married, he was an outdoorsman, a hunter, and all this, and he wanted to teach his wife how to shoot. And he worked with her, and she learned how to handle a gun, so he took her deer hunting one day. And he tells the following story of what happened when he took her deer hunting. He got her into a really good spot. The deer would be passing right along here. There's a trail. You can see their sign. So you just get right here, and you stay right here, and I'm going to go on the other side of the hill over here. And if you get in trouble, you fire twice in the air. You fire your rifle twice in the air, and I'll come and find you. Well, he gets over the hill, and he's there. He gets settled in a little bit. And it's not long till he hears a single gunshot. And he's thinking, well, she either got a deer or she got in trouble and forgot to fire a second shot. So he took off over the hill and got over to her, and she was holding a man at gunpoint, had the rifle pointed right at the fella, and she heard the man say these words, "All right, lady, the deer is yours, but please let me get my saddle off of him first." Now, it's important for a hunter to know the difference between a deer and a horse, but it's also important for us to understand the difference between poetry and prose, or narrative writing. We need to know the difference in those two types of literature, or we're going to end up making somewhat the same mistake as Mrs. Dunham made. For instance, when we read the history of the crossing of the Red Sea, we know that's a literal fact. We can take that literally. But then when we read about David making his bed to swim, and that he dissolved his couch with his tears, that's in Psalm 6, verse 6. Then obviously we know not to take that literally. That simply meaning he was weeping unconsolably, could not stop weeping. When we read the words, "once upon a time," and then we finish with, "and they lived happily ever after," we know for sure that that is not to be taken literally. Because it doesn't work like that, does it, married folks? No, sir. No, ma'am. Now, we do not go to the Psalms for doctrine. We do not go to the Psalms even for historical accuracy or scientific fact for that matter, but for encouragement and for concepts in living. Because the Psalms are poetry. They are emotion language. They are words from the heart. So our text tonight is taken from Psalm 39 and specifically verses 4 through 7, which is a prayer that David is offering to God. In verses 1 through 3, David realizes that he cannot tame his tongue. James made that very clear, didn't he? In James chapter 3, verse 8, the tongue cannot be tamed. No man can tame the tongue. All you can do is try to control it. But it takes vigilance. It takes constant work to control the tongue. So David is basically saying, I can't seem to get control of my tongue. And so figuratively speaking, David says he puts a muzzle on his mouth to avoid sinning. He's basically saying, I'm not going to say anything good or evil for fear that I'm going to say something wrong. So he was really struggling with his inner man. He was really struggling with how he felt about things. And finally, he says, it was so into me that I opened my mouth and spoke to the Lord. And that is what we're going to look at tonight. This is the prayer that he spoke aloud. Said he spoke it with his tongue. So it's an out loud, an oral prayer that he makes to God. And I want you to notice this prayer with me tonight. He says then, Lord, make me to know my end, and what is the measure of my days, that I may know how frail I am. He's not asking for God to show him the day he's going to die. He's just asking him to help me realize how short my life really is. Indeed, you have made my days as handbreadths, and my age is as nothing before you. Certainly, every man at his best state is but vapor. Again, James goes right back to that point that our life is but a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. That's the way our life is. And then he goes on to say, surely every man walks about like a shadow. Surely they busy themselves in vain. He heaps up riches and does not know who will gather them. And now, Lord, what do I wait for? My hope is in you. David offers this prayer to God after he realizes that his mouth is going to get him in trouble. And so he's trying to control what he says. But David's prayer basically is saying, Lord, I know life is short. Help me not to forget that. Life is short, isn't it? I'm looking around this room and I see a lot of gray hair. And I can tell you from my own gray hair, life is short. It doesn't seem any time at all since we were kids, does it? It seems like it was just a few months ago that we were children running around at home with our families and our parents. It's just a strange sensation as we look back and reflect upon just how short life is. And it can end with a heartbeat. In a single heartbeat, our life can be over. And sometimes you can see it coming. And more times than not, you have no warning. It's just over. God has total control of your life. Our days on this earth, brethren, are like, David says, they're like handbreadths. Handbreadths. The width of one's hand. The width of a hand. Now, it's a hand. As we'll talk about how you measure a horse is so many hands tall, and that's basically looking at 4-inch increments. That's the average. Now, you know, it depends on the size of the hand, doesn't it, Stan? I mean, you know, yours is a little bit bigger than mine. So, but on average, about 4 inches is a hand breadth. And so when you talk about a horse being so many hands tall, That's what that's talking about. Well, David's basically saying, my life is like a few handbreadths. Just not very long at all. I mean, if you know, you look back and it seems like your life has gone by in a flash, doesn't it? By the way, Merry Christmas. It was just Christmas, wasn't it? Well, I want to be the first to wish you Merry Christmas because it'll be here again real soon, won't it? Before we can turn around. Last week at Lowe's, I walked in the store, pick up something, and they had Halloween decorations. I walked in there Friday. They have Christmas decorations up all over the place. The Halloween has been shoved off into a corner. What in the world? It's almost here again. And it was just here, wasn't it? It was just here. I hear your stories. I listen to you. Sometimes you're talking to me, sometimes you're talking to one another, but I hear your stories. Your stories of your youth, of sports that you played, of school events that you were involved in, of working at an early job, of when your children were small. And of course, it all happened so fast. They were grown and gone and on their own. And so many of you have asked, where did the time go? Brethren, life is brief. Even to you younger ones, life is going by very swiftly. Every day that passes is another day that's gone and gone quickly. How many days are we promised? Well, the average life, according to David, is 70 years. And if God blesses you with strength and health, then you might make it older than that, all the way up to 80 or beyond. But you're not promised any of those. In fact, you're not even promised 70 years, are you? You're not even promised that. He's basically saying life at its best is going to be about 70 years. And if by reason of strength God blesses you with 80, you can't count on more than that. But you're not even allowed really to count on that much. Surely every man that walks about, surely every man walks about like a shadow. Surely they busy themselves in vain. He heaps up riches and does not know who will gather them. Do you remember being in school? Some of the homework that they gave us, some of it was profitable. And a lot of it was just busy work. And that's a word that I heard when I was in school back in the late 60s and early 70s. Busy work. And it, in my mind and in the mind of my fellow students, most of the homework we had was busy work. And a lot of the classwork we had was busy work. Busy work. Just something to keep you occupied. Something to keep you busy. Busy work. Where's the profit in that? Where's the profit in that? We spend our lives building. We really do. We build a home. We build a family. We build for retirement. We build for a future. We save. We plan. We put away for an uncertain future. And it's right and it's good. You should do that. There's nothing wrong with that. But you cannot, and you should not count on that being the case. You cannot and you should not count on having a future in this life. That's why the sermon this morning, we were talking about being prepared. Prepared to meet God. Because we have no promise of tomorrow. We have no promise of a retirement party. We have no promise of years spent doing the things that we really wanted to do all those years, but didn't have time to do. We have no promise of these things. And we have no promise concerning the wealth that we've been able to acquire and lay by. We have no promise concerning that either. I can't help but go back to this parable that Jesus gave of the rich man in Luke 12, verse 16 beginning. Then he spoke a parable to them saying, the ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. Well, God's the one who gave him those crops. And he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do since I have no room to store my crops? So he said, I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there I will store all my crops and my goods, and I will say to my soul. Didn't say, he's not talking to God. He's talking to himself. I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease. Eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, fool. I like the King James there. Thou fool. You foolish man. Tonight, this very night, is your last night on the earth. This very night, you're going to say goodbye to your family. You're going to say goodbye to your possessions. And then whose will those things be which you have provided? And then he goes on, Jesus goes on to say, so is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. Now some have wrongly concluded that the man was wrong for tearing down his barns and building bigger barns. That was not his sin. That may have been simply good business. That wasn't his sin. There are times when you grow. There's times when a business will profit and grow. There's times when your home life will profit and grow. You may end up having to move to a bigger house as your children are bigger and you get more of them. It may be that God blesses you financially, that you're able to buy more land and more property and expand. And you know, if you have a farm, you may increase the number of fields that you have. And so at some point, your storage housing, your housing for your goods is not sufficient, so you'd have to tear down and build bigger or build more. And that's fine. There's nothing, he's not condemned for that. Jesus told us why He was condemned. He laid up treasure for himself and was not rich toward God. He gives us the answer right there. He was not rich toward God. All of his plans were wrapped up in himself. That was the problem. That was the problem. And brethren, there's nothing wrong with us making a profit and saving our money and making plans for the future. That was not this man's sin. His sin was leaving God out of his plans. And he did not plan to do good works. He did not plan to be involved in helping others or even involved in being a Christian. He was all wrapped up in himself. He was rich toward himself and not rich toward God. And so this passage, surely every man walks about like a shadow. They busy themselves in vain. They heap up riches and do not know who will gather them. Do not know who will end up with them. Who will bring the crop in? You don't have any guarantee that you will. You have no guarantee of that. You may leave that crop in the field. That could happen. And so David makes this recognition then. So we end at the same place we began, verse 4 and verse 7. Lord, make me to know my end. Not the last day of my life, but to realize what my end is. That I'm going to leave this world. Make me to know my end and what is the measure of my days, to recognize the shortness of my life. That I may know how frail I am. I have no control over this. I have no control over this. My days are as a handbreadth. My age is nothing before you. And now, Lord, what do I wait for? What do I wait for? My hope is in you. Those are good words, brethren. What do I wait for? Why am I getting up on Sunday evening? You get home in time to get comfortable for a little while. Maybe you go visit the family. Maybe there's some activity with family that you're involved in and you cut it short to get ready and leave about 4:30, 4:40 or something like that. Come back to this church building for an evening service. Why are you doing that? Why are you doing that? Why is it that on Monday morning when you get up and you head to work that you make sure that what you wear is appropriate? Why do you do that? When you talk to people at work, why is it that you refrain from getting involved in some of the dirty jokes and the inappropriate language that they share many times? Why do you make careful preparation to make sure that you don't participate in gossip, that you don't lie, but that you make sure you tell the truth? And why is it that you make sure that the words that come out of your mouth are pure and holy and upright? Why do you go to all that trouble? What is it that you're trying to do? You're waiting. That's what you're doing. You're waiting for the return of our Lord Jesus Christ. And you're waiting for the time of your own demise, the time of your own departure from this life. You're waiting. And your hope is in God. You have put your hope in Him. You have put your trust in Him. You have committed your soul to His keeping. And you know whom you have believed. And you are persuaded that He is able to keep that which you committed unto Him against that day. You have that confidence. David had that confidence, and we should too. And now, Lord, what do I wait for? My hope is in you. Is your hope in Jesus Christ? Is your hope in that when you leave this world, you will go to heaven? I know you want that. But do you have that biblical hope of that, both a desire and an expectation that that will be? If there's something in your life that would prevent you from having that hope, that confidence, that assurance of your salvation, you need to do something about it. If there's some change in your life you need to make it, and you need to do it today. You don't need to wait till tomorrow. You need to do it today. And if you're not a Christian, you need to obey the gospel today. Begin your walk with Jesus so that not only can you walk with Him here, but you can live with Him there. So whatever your needs this evening, if you need to respond to the Lord's invitation, we invite and encourage you to come if you need to. It's right, and now we stand and sing.